I know, I send you such funny memes and you never laugh at them.
What do you send them to me on?
Instagram.
Oh, that'd be it. Yeah, I'm on Instagram once every couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a barrage waiting for you.
Yeah.
Are you?
No, we were recording on audio. We are not recording.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure in case we said something particularly clever. Yeah, I don't. I was on Facebook a lot. And then about like, I'd say 2012 went, I don't want to be on here as much anymore. and then just kind of slowly panned out of that. And then Twitter, like I'll go on. Anyway, yeah, I'm not online a whole lot.
It was again, one of the funniest things that I make the announcement. And it's everyone I've ever known in life sending me all these congratulations that Ashley is pregnant. And then Andrew Heaton liked, hey, remember, we're going to see the state tomorrow night.
Although, to be very clear on this, this was not me being indifferent
No, it was just you just confirming that we had
about 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
Jen burst in and gave Ashley a giant hug and went, I'm so shocked and happy. And I went, why? What are you, what's going on? And then everybody looked at me like I was a moron. And I was like, is it Arbor Day? Like, what are we excited about? Is there some kind of sale going on? And it turns out there is, there's a womb sale. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're not wrong, but, wife is pregnant. So,
congratulations.
That is the news. It's been a long time coming, 20 weeks that we waited. Normally people announce at 12, but you know, considering we knew we were going to do all this publicly, we wanted to make sure, you know, everything was growing on the right side of the skin and there didn't need to be any emergency situations that would unfold. So, but everything's good. We literally had, this was actually a pain in the ass. All this was supposed to happen Thursday. We're going to go to the anatomy scan and then sit with the doctor. This is how this works. And they would go through the anatomy scan and explain everything. Then all of a sudden the tech for the ultrasound is sick. Closest they can get us in is Monday. And the closest that we can go talk to the doctor is Wednesday. Meanwhile, we have targeted Tuesday as the announcement for this kid for months. Like I have plans with my brother to go to record my mom because we're going to surprise both her and Brian on the stream. Big thing. So we go do the anatomy scan Monday and we are trying to finagle them to tell us like, hey, just baseline stuff. Like, yeah, Ashley might need to eat more potassium or, you know, like strengthen her core, whatever the things that you would normally say as she moves into this phase of pregnancy. But like, you know, two eyes, a nose, like, are the lungs developing? Does she have a brain? All that kind of stuff. Like, can we just know that? And so Ashley is just spam calling them yesterday morning, trying to figure out whether or not we were a go to announce. And finally they call back and I can't even get down. I hear her talking and I like run down to hear what they say. And apparently the tech understood the gravity of the situation and just opened it with, it's normal. Everything's fine. It's normal. The doctor will tell you the rest. 47th percentile in terms of weight and literally boom, right there in the middle, everything is doing great. So that gave us the go ahead to make the announcement, which reached the entire internet save for old Andy Heats.
Yep. I was reading a paperback copy of Circe, which is a really wonderful retelling of Greek myths last night. Like literally as this is happening, I'm going, man, that Prometheus really got a raw deal. That is probably the exact moment that everyone in the internet was freaking out.
Yeah. So I saw it on Ashley's page first and because she posted the picture of the sonogram. And my reaction was, what date is this? Pretty sure it's past April 1st. Then I looked at the post and it wasn't April 1st. And then I went to Justin's page and saw that he had posted something. And then I didn't believe it until I saw that you had told your mother.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't think he would fuck with his mother, but he would fuck with everyone else this way. But when I saw you told your mom, I was like, this is real.
Yeah. So. It's funny how many people thought that it could be a prank.
Yeah,
that, because that would be a very, very poor prank.
First 5 minutes of us talking down in the kitchen, I was like, sounds real, but I do want a little bit more. Like I could fake those uterine black and white photo things. Oh, yeah. What do you call them? Ultrasounds.
Uterine black and white photo things.
You know those womb daguerreotypes that, exactly, that ladies, yeah, put on refrigerators.
Yeah. No, real as rain, and
but we all operate on the idea that if something is funny, you do it. So I don't think, sure, it's anything personal. I just think that, like, if you thought of something that would be funny, I do think you would do it. I think that's why you're getting, oh, that reaction.
No.
Because it's you.
Trust me, it would be funny. Also, the fallout on a joke like that is not something that I would ever want to deal with.
Yeah.
Because if you pop that joke, then the next thing is, yeah, but now we all have a license to ask about whether or not you're having kids.
Yeah.
And that is something for
plus
which
there's like I enjoy a good prank, but for a prank to be ethical, the person you're pranking needs to find it funny within about 10 minutes. If they don't find it funny within 10 minutes, you're just bullying someone. So like that kind of thing, I feel like would have an outsized effect had it been faked, which hasn't for sure. Justin and Ashley are both pregnant.
Yes. Oh, this is another thing that I always thought, and we were all around the same age, that it was the progressive thing to do to say we are pregnant, as it represented a break from a patriarchal
and
world,
it's a completely
where the man didn't
equal
care.
Sharing of everything.
Well, right? Yeah. now
just as much credit as Ashley does. No,
again, that's where it's become. But back in the day, am I going crazy? But that was like the granola crunchy thing to do is, yeah, say like
there was a
pregnant
transition in the 90s where it went for, there's literally a film, I think, with Hugh Grant, where he begins with, my wife is pregnant, and like the closing line is, we're pregnant.
Yes. Because
he goes on an emotional journey realizing that this is something they're doing and that he owes responsibility to her.
But now you're a shithead.
Now you're a shithead.
Yeah, because like you're not pregnant. You're not the one whose body is now.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, look, I'm fine not getting any credit for this. I'm fine saying that my wife is pregnant. But that was like the Don Draper thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I guess it's back. That's awesome.
I've always found it weird to say we are pregnant when your body has nothing to do with it past.
Let's bring the rest of it back, because I'd like to smoke cigars and drink with my friends while she's going through all this.
That sounds pretty good.
I'd like to just get handed a baby that I don't see until it's 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was with you last week when you were smoking cigars and drinking with your friends. So I'm pretty sure you're back to the drum.
Yeah, but he wants to do it in the delivery room.
Yes.
Like he wants to be at the hospital.
Oh, no. Not in the delivery room. What am I? A paramedic? Like
the doctor comes out, high fives him, hands him a cigar and goes, congratulations, Dad.
Yeah.
And then like lights up his own cigarette.
And then I do a faint. I do like the
move. And then everybody goes back to reading their Playboys.
It's amazing.
We have a really good time at the hospital.
How much my knowledge of pregnancy is just cobbled together from pop culture of just like there's going to be a moment where Ashley will scream, you did this to me in the delivery room. Like all these sitcom tropes of pregnancy. They're pretty much all I know until now when we're finding everything out bit by bit. Yeah. Babyjurymore.com, by the way, if you want to help out with the registry, and where there will be a new
podcast. Oh, is that
podcast.
Why there was jury? Wait, hold on. It was like Jurymore or something was.
Baby Jurymore. Yeah. But Jurymore. So Jurymore was a podcast that Ashley and I did when we were getting married.
Okay.
And now we have been recording.
Because it's a portmanteau of your both of your last names.
Yes. Jury. Well, yeah. It's like the portmanteau
sort of,
my nickname and the end of Ashley's name. But we will have a new season that we've been recording since July, since the day that Ashley decided to go off birth control. We have been recording a podcast periodically. And yeah.
Nice.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I look forward to listening to that.
What the hell is going on with
our camera is
it's like Riverside's
flickering.
Clapping for you, Justin.
No, I think it's an HDMI thing, which means somebody's probably leaning on something, but
not it.
We'll just keep an eye on it. From Austin, Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young.
I'm Andrew Heaton.
I'm Jen Briney.
And we're not wrong. There we go. Out of sorts here. On this edition of the program, friends, we're going to talk about the mystery of fewer tax returns and
tax refunds.
Oh, tax refunds, not returns.
There's a lot of returns.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of returns.
Yeah, plenty of returns.
With tax day. And whether or not the Senate should have a trial for the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. That plus your emails. Let's talk about tax day. Did you guys have a good tax day? Did you have a pleasant tax day?
This is the most on top of my taxes I've been in easily a decade. Because I hired a tax accountant years ago, and I have like $50 from some shed that like my family collectively owns in Norman that oftentimes gets mailed too late in the year. So I end up having to do, I always have to file a extension, and then I end up getting my taxes done usually in June or July. Not so much because of that, that bit I'm waiting on, but because I get it and then I wait 4 months.
Yeah.
Whereas yesterday I filed the extension on the day that it was due.
Hey.
And then sent all my shit to my tax attorney. So I'm way ahead of the
game.
That
counts as on top of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is like for somebody who's usually 3 hours late, I left at the time I was supposed to be there. That is the equivalent of what's happening. We're supposed to be at dinner at 7. I left the house at 7 o'clock. I'm doing way better.
A theme on the show?
Mm-hmm.
Baby steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jen?
So I am the black sheep of my family. My dad, my mother, and my sister are all accountants. And then when my dad got remarried, he married an accountant.
Mm-hmm. Hot.
And so they take care of their mathematically challenged me and do my taxes for me. So I'm so lucky. But I was ahead of the game this year because when dad called me to ask if I had everything in the Dropbox, I did.
Nice.
For the first time ever.
So he didn't have to bully you into.
So I am also improving, but I don't do my taxes at all. So even with your story, Andrew, I think you still win in adulting because I'm not there yet.
Can he do my taxes?
I don't know.
I would totally have Mr. He'd Clark kill do me. My taxes.
He offered to kill me.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, I feel like if we're at that level of intimacy, then maybe you can just do a dude's taxes.
We'll see. He listens to the show.
He does. All right. In recent years, there has been a noticeable trend in the U.S. tax system. Fewer people are receiving tax refunds and more people are finding themselves paying additional taxes. The latest statistics from the IRS reveal a 3.3% decrease in the number of refunds issued this year compared to previous years. The trend has been consistent over the past few years and is causing concern amongst tax professionals and taxpayers alike. The reasons behind the trend are not fully understood, but there are several theories. Some professionals suggest that changes in the way people work could be a contributing factor. The rise of the gig economy has led people earning income that isn't subject to the tax withholding system, where employers automatically deduct tax payments from people's paychecks. Those workers are supposed to make quarterly estimated payments to the IRS, but if they failed to do so, they could find themselves owing taxes instead of receiving a refund. Another possible explanation lies in the way that the government calculates how much tax should be withheld from paychecks. Following the 2017 tax cuts, the Trump administration revamped the withholding system. The old system of personal exemptions was discarded and replaced with a new one designed to be more accurate, but many feel more confusing. The new system requires people to do a mini tax return to estimate their withholding, a process that has left many taxpayers befuddled. The decline in refunds could also have consequences for tax compliance. While some people file their taxes out of a sense of duty, others do it in anticipation of a refund. A decline in refunds could therefore lead to fewer people filing their taxes on time, which could make it more difficult for the IRS to enforce tax laws. Jen.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh,
I was convinced
that this was going to heat you first.
You're in an entire accountant family.
Yeah.
I'm the one that doesn't know anything.
I handle judge shit.
Exactly.
you
carry the burden.
Yeah.
You know?
I just figured we had two topics. One is Congress and one is economics. I just figured this was an Andrew topic.
Yeah, but Mayorkas is my uncle, so I'm going to talk about him.
Exactly. Heaton is from a family of judges. You are from a family of accountants, mm-hmm. and my daughter will be from a family of horseshit artists. So when she's on her panel show, that'll be the thing that she gets.
Mm-hmm.
Why are fewer people getting refunds?
Well, I would guess that it's because there's more people like me. I mean, the fact that this article even said it's a mystery, so I'm obviously just like pulling all of this out of my ass. But I know that I have to do estimated taxes 4 times a year, which it's right in the name. I am.
Wait, do you have to do that? Because I just put it in my bank account. Yes. And then I get fucking walloped at the end of the year.
So no, you are supposed to. We are all. And by the way, we are all in the same boat. We all are independent creators. I guess you and I probably filed jointly with our spouse.
Correct.
But at the, you are supposed to make quarterly payments.
Oh. Based do you on guys last not do that?
I don't know.
Are you serious?
Why am I going to let them hold my money?
Because they fine you if you don't.
I don't. I mean,
cost of doing business.
I don't.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. I don't think they. Don't. No, they don't. I mean, it's less than what I would get having my money earn money elsewhere to pay the fine.
Do you actually know that that's true?
Are you sure?
Sounds good. Fine you.
I thought that was kind of for our benefit to make sure we're not surprised at the end of the year.
No. They fine you.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You're paying money you don't have to pay.
Oh, okay.
By doing that. What I do, TurboTax spits out how much you're supposed to pay. And so I put it in my to-do list. It's like January 15th, April 15th. So it's, and I just put it in my to-do list in the beginning of the year. And so in like January 1st, April 1st, June 1st, September 1st, I'm always making
I
a
hate
giant
doing
payment.
So much.
I do too.
I don't want to ruin my entire year. Yeah. I would rather ruin my spring, which it does every year. I would rather do that. It's worth to pay for the subscription to the United States of America to not ruin my entire year by
so
always
you
sending
write
them
a massive check.
That's what I do. I just wrote the biggest check of my entire life. That like literally on the 15th. I won't say how much it was, but like I'm paying more in taxes now than I ever have because my career keeps going up.
We have passed
and
the point.
One fucking check, assuming I'm not, I don't know more. I haven't had my accountant do it yet.
Yeah, we have passed the point where I pay in taxes every year what I used to think was a good living. And now I just get mad at the federal government.
If my estimate was correct, and I did very much back in the envelope math, this year I will pay more in taxes than I received from the federal government while working as a staffer for Congress. Like,
well, that's good.
No, I'm like, it's also good that I'm doing that well. But yeah, when you do it in one check, though, you do think very hard about where is this going?
Yeah.
What are you doing with this money? Because like one of the I tend to be a fairly limited government free enterprise guy. My problem with taxes isn't so much paying them. It's that the people using it are squandering it.
Of course.
Like I don't, you know, if they went, hey, you're paying 5% extra taxes, but don't worry, we're actually going to get rid of homelessness. We're going to be able to get all these people to quit suffering. I'd be like, well, that's worth 5% increase, but I don't think that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I do what I do.
In our woods finally got corralled. Because our district attorney here in Austin refuses to prosecute him. He's been in and out of the hands of law enforcement over the past few years while he chainsaws in the woods and screams at people and makes weird Blair Witch statues of crosses that he chisels out of the concrete in our neighborhood.
Those are some orange flags.
DA.
Because if you did get murdered by that guy, everybody would be like, you didn't see this coming.
DA's like, I don't know, another chance. Maybe he's going to get it together. But his mom had to come down from New York. It was a story in the local news that his mom, they institutionalized him one more time. And his mom says that she is going to take them back to New York State, where he's from.
Mm. Well, that's good.
But yeah, when that stuff happens, and granted, I know it's not federal, blah, 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 save the emails. But that's when I'm like, I'm glad we have nukes. That's what I can always come back to, is that the United States is kind of like an Amazon Prime, but we have nukes.
As in, no one's going to fuck with us?
Yeah,
like you're paying for the...
Just in case. It used to be that we got the Captain Phillips treatment, of like, if you're a fat idiot and you fuck up at your job and get captured by a bunch of teenagers from Somalia, we'll send elite killers to murder those teenagers. But lately that one, it's kind of like now that Prime has ads, it's like not quite as good as it used to. Like now we get, you know, you can get kidnapped by Hamas and there ain't no SEAL Team 6 coming to get you.
Some truth to that. Mm. I don't do, going back to taxes, I don't do the one giant check thing, but I do the estimated taxes. But what it ends up being is I cash out my Patreon, and four times a year, the entire thing goes away. And I find that very upsetting. So I get what you mean by like just having that upset be one time a year as opposed to four times. Cause it's hard to like, be like, okay, here's all of my money that I made this month, four times a year.
Please hold it for free. For me, federal government.
Well, you know, that's what I find interesting about the people that really want the tax refunds, the whole idea that like not getting a refund is a bad thing, because those are the people that are giving the government an interest-free loan. Like, yeah, if you're getting a tax refund, that means you're overpaying, yeah, and just letting the government sit on that. Like, why? Like, I think the fact that tax refunds, there's fewer of them, is probably a good thing, because it's, that's, it means not money.
People are getting smarter, and they're actually filling, yeah, this stuff out better on the front end rather than, I like that idea.
Well, the withholding,
I don't think it's true, but I like the idea.
Yeah. I think it's because there's more people that are like gig economy, you, yeah, know, Uber drivers, they have to do taxes like we do. There's more people that have to do that are doing the manual taxes. There's less of the withholding nonsense, because that's one thing that I hate, the withholding thing, because I feel like all of us should be aware of how much money is disappearing. And if you have your company withholding your federal taxes for you, you don't even see it.
Yeah.
It never goes into your pay. You don't even like consider it. And I think it's one of the reasons why people feel so disconnected from the government. They don't think about it so much, how much they put into it, and therefore want to take ownership over what people do with it. I think I'm very much aware of it because I have to write that check. And it does bother me every time I write the check to know that about half of it is going to these wars that I don't support.
Did you see the meme after the Iranian attack on Israel that was like the missiles coming in from Iran,
yeah,
and then,
yeah,
the Iron,
yeah,
Dome? And so it's like all the Iron Dome missiles, and it says my tax dollars. And then the Iranian missiles, it's like somehow also my tax, yeah, dollars.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you, Jen, on both counts. I think if everyone in America, this wouldn't work for practical reasons, but if everyone in America just wrote a check at the end of the year, I think you would have far more responsibility foisted on the government by people paying the taxes. Because like now, like being self-employed, I do that, and I'm very aware of the taxes that I pay. When I was getting a regular W-9 and I was an employee, and I really didn't have to think about it that hard. I didn't think about how much money was actually going there because it came out. And the other thing, as a taxpayer, I would love to have an itemized receipt of where my money's going. Like this, you know, I there's some guy from the Obama administration. I don't remember what his name was, but he famously said, I like taxes. They're what I buy civilization with. I have some qualms with that statement, but accepting it at face value, if we're buying civilization with our taxes, I would like to see what you're spending it on. And I would love to actually see, you guys spent, you know, 2% of my money that I worked very hard for. And you gave it to like, you know, sugar subsidies or some shit. Like, I think people would be surprised at the amount of entitlement spending that actually is where most of the federal income is going. But ditto with the military and everything else. But I'd love for that to go, because I think most people, if you ask them, what do you want the government to be spending money on? They'd be like roads, mm-hmm, and military and perhaps welfare. That would probably be like the top three things people want. Maybe libraries. I don't know. But
yeah,
it wouldn't be. You'd find a bunch of things that people aren't really wanting to spend the money on.
Like interest payments on our debt.
Yeah, which, yeah, is huge. And what I'm looking
for
right
now
is
that, because that's about to get really bad over the next 20, 30 years. That is the dumbest fucking.
Yeah.
Like, we are like, imagine Titanic, except if in the film Titanic, it was just 9 hours of staring at an iceberg coming at them.
The extended cut.
And they just, and every 20 minutes they'd go, well, it's the other guy's fault. And like that, like that's it. That's the next 20, 30 years if nothing changes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I found it. So Brave New Films put this out. It's not exactly what you're asking for, but it's pretty close. But it said in 2023, the average U.S. taxpayer contributed $5,109 for militarism compared to $4,308 for Medicare and Medicaid. So we actually spend more on military than those programs combined.
We spend more on defense than Medicare and Medicaid. I too am a critic of the defense state, but it's my understanding that if we're making like a pie chart of federal spending, that Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are larger than defense.
So I don't know how they made these numbers, but there's also different ways that Medicaid and Medicare are funded. It might not necessarily come from income taxes. So I don't like it's. Yeah, I'm not really sure, because there's different ways to fund those programs. Where the military, that's discretionary funding. That's appropriated from our income taxes by Congress every single year. So I think because that's 100% discretionary, it makes sense to me that that would come more from our paychecks than other things.
That number could be looking at discretionary spending in terms of entitlements rather than the non-discretionary spending. Like if we're just looking at the stuff that's under control of Congress rather than automatic.
Yeah. Because okay. like the automatic stuff, I also don't like some of that might be corporate taxes. Like, I'm not really sure, but I do know discretionary spending is generally like
that might from be our it. Pockets. Because again, I think we're on the same page in terms of like we're spending too much on military bases abroad, et cetera, et cetera. But noting this, I think that it's fairly dwarfed by entitlement spending. The majority of interest on the debt now, I don't think it's surpassed the military, but it will. And
it's close.
Yeah.
But then like, so, you know, $5,000 for military, we pay less than $350 for education, at least federally. So yeah, there's people that are attempting to do those calculations, yeah. but.
Well, it's weird too. It's like hard. I've been doing research on a bunch of shit, but so I am probably most familiar with the United Kingdom outside of the United States. And I do think that like, countries in Europe, I think you get more bang for your buck with taxes in Europe than you do in the United States.
Sure.
But when you look at it, like the problem's not the taxes, it's the spending. Yeah. So like the United Kingdom, France, the United States, Canada, most of the countries you can think of when we think of like Western European, Western countries, the amount of spending per person's pretty similar. It's really not that different. Like the amount of money that the government of Germany spends on Germans, the amount of money that the American government spends on Americans, when you average it out per citizen, about the same. It's not that we spend less than other countries. And it's also like, this is very strange. We have a much more progressive tax system than they do in the United Kingdom. In the United States, we have a very progressive tax rate with our federal income. We rely.
Yeah, I found that out about 2 years ago.
We rely on
that. What do you
guys
mean by that when you call it progressive? Like, what does that mean?
You pay more the more you make.
Yes.
Okay.
Our rich people pay a higher percentage of the tax burden than rich people do in the United Kingdom. And I'm speaking very, very generally here. The principal difference, as I understand it, between us and Western Europe is not so much the upper tier. They do have higher nominal tax rates. The effective tax rate is a different question. But like they tax the middle class much higher than we do. But when it comes to like the percentage of taxes paid, so in the United States, the top 1% pays about 45% of all federal taxes. So the top 1% of the country pays about half of all taxes in the country. Whereas in the United Kingdom, that's like maybe 25% that they pay. But part of that is because the United Kingdom has much more like what we would call regressive taxes. They have a VAT, which is going to be more regressive because you're doing a sales tax that everybody pays as opposed to income tax that you might be below the threshold of. You've got council taxes, which are kind of like property taxes, things like that. So we end up having a more progressive tax rate. And so what I look at is go, well, the fuck up from what I can tell is the spending. The fuck up is the administration more than the like and like there too, like the we have a more progressive effective tax rate now than we've had in the last 40 years. Because one of the other things that gets weird is there's a difference between nominal taxes and effective taxes. So like in the 50s, the nominal highest tax rate was 91%. But the effective tax rate was, I think, 36%. Whereas like now the top marginal, when you add up everything, estate, all the shit, it's like maybe 26% for the top marginal tax rate. So it's lower than it was in the 50s, but still higher than it's been in the last 40 years. Like at any point in our lifetime, rich people are paying more percentage of their income now than at any prior point. So I look at that and go, the one major fuck up we talked about was like, we're just pissing it away on interest payments. That's a thing. And then just in terms of how it's being spent.
Well, and on obnoxious militarism.
Obnoxious militarism. But I would argue too, like just the actual administration of the dollars spent as well when we get into like welfare and stuff like that, which I'm in favor of a social safety net. I don't want to eliminate that, but just looking
at you have to apply it in a way that I don't know,
helps
people.
Exactly.
That's always the thing that I find. God, I would love, I think that we could really make this horseshoe theory a circle. If we just focused on not the programs or the expenditures on the programs, but what happens to the dollars,
right?
Like, can we just look at how much money we put into schools, how much money we put into these entitlement programs, and what the product that we get back is? And if it's not what we want, it is our rights as Americans to demand that we spend the money better, that we don't waste the cash. And I think that that's something that people who are of the more libertarian bent that might not want to spend it, but if it's going to be spent, want it spent effectively, can very much appreciate. And the more socialist to communist bent can say, hey, look, even if I want to expand this
throughout all government. We want to make sure the books are good.
Yeah.
We don't want a leaky system.
I did an episode about a month ago on open the books with Adam Angiuski, who's a very much a budget watchdog at every level. And in doing preliminary research for that, I was astonished at how little knowledge we have of what is effective in terms of tax dollars spent. So the arguments we're having, as you point out, Justin, tend to be need-based. There's a need here. How much are we going to spend on that need? And there's a place for that. But like the internal organizations we have within the federal government tend to be police officer type things. So like, big fan of the GAO. Very glad we have the Government Accountability Office, right? But the Government Accountability Office is making sure that people aren't being corrupt or abusing things. It's not looking at the efficacy of it. But like, I have no idea if like, if we were looking at the federal budget going like, oh, wow, JPL like really knocks it out of the park. Like JPL, you're getting like, you know, $5 for every dollar you spend on the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Like that is a really worthwhile investment.
Shout out to JPL.
As opposed to like, you know, the Department of the Interior where you're like, well, actually, you're only getting about 3/4 of it. I have no idea, but I don't think anybody does. Are you aware of any mechanisms within Congress where they look at kind of just the effectiveness of dollars spent?
Yeah, the Congressional Research Service does those kinds of analytics all the time. But I think one of the political problems we have, and I'm going to name it, the Republican Party doesn't want some of these programs to work. Like they, one of their ways of being fiscally conservative or whatever is to have a welfare program that they make it so hard to actually get the money. They put up so many barriers to it that they just want people to just not apply. And so if that is your idea of fiscal conservative, you know, yeah, you're not going to spend as much money, but you're also wasting money with the extra paperwork, with the extra administration. Like these are stupid ways of doing things, but we keep voting for these people that are doing things that are stupid and designed to make these programs not work so that people don't take advantage of them. I think that's a problem that we have to tackle. And it's something that I witness all the time, but we as Americans aren't adequately informed on the details of these policies. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day and I won't name it because I don't want to, I actually enjoy it, but they had a guest on. Stop it. But they had a guest on where they were talking about, you know, like the FISA situation. They're trying to renew FISA by this Friday, and instead
in the Senate, they passed it out of the House, and the update. Yeah, the update from last week.
Exactly. So what this interview ended up being was, how is the bill getting passed? Which person is going to vote for it? Who isn't? What's the politics of it? And not 1 second of this interview was about what's in the actual bill.
Yeah,
which is something I'm quite concerned about, and I find it difficult to get that news. If you want the like the back and forth of the Senate and House drama, that's easy to find, but the policies are not discussed. And so when we look at these welfare programs, I can easily see by looking in the bills that they're writing how they're just trying to put up programs and then put up barriers to them actually being used. If this was adequately reported on in America, I think this is something that is actually easy to fix. But if we don't know about the problems, we can't fix
and,
that.
And this is something that I would say is a deficiency in modern journalism.
For sure.
There is a space for the food fight, DC-based gossip stuff, but it should be part of a balanced breakfast. It is the Lucky Charms next to you know the bacon and the bread and stuff like that. And what you should have in a system that is not terrified about losing their access to politicians is a review of stuff like this. And outlets that gained a lot of trust, like many major media institutions, should not be there to carry water for politicians, but rather to say, here's what FISA is. Here's a deep dive into what's been done, how many times it's been done. Here are people who say that it's absolutely terrible. Here are people who say that it's absolutely necessary. Let's all get more read up on this one thing. But it's not. Everything has become the food fight. And part of it is the standards, if I can make it about journalism for a second, the standards of anonymous sourcing, which just fed more and more and more the ability to have a story without a name on the record on it, and certainly without the major assertion, which is dishy and has a bunch of bold-faced names. We can get Marjorie Taylor Greene in a headline. We can get AOC in a headline. Oh my God, imagine the clicks. And you don't really get well-done journalism. The number one reporters, you can just look at the number one reporters from any Washington Post, New York Times, I'll just say people who put the most money into this right now, they're all the unnamed source people.
There was a guy that
the Access journalist.
And I can hold on just a second. I can testify to why this is. What I do by actually looking into these bills, it's time consuming and it's hard.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly, like you guys know, I'm constantly kind of upset that I can't do more because I feel like there should, if I had a team of 100 people, I could do this a lot better, but it's just me. This is hard work where I think going into the hallways and interviewing Marjorie Taylor Greene versus AOC, not only is that easy, it's kind of fun and it's clickbaity. And I think that's.
Yeah. And without totally slagging off, I know, especially for PX3, a bunch of congressional reporters, it's fine. There's a space for it.
There's space.
I just don't think, and I don't blame them in all these situations. The people that I really lay blame on are assignment editors.
Yeah.
It's not reporters. It's assignment editors. Theoretically, their job in the chain is to say, I want to shape news. I want to set out the balanced breakfast. And sometimes, you're going to have something that isn't as well read, but if we gain a reputation for this kind of reporting, when something really, really matters, they're going to trust us. And they're not just going to think that we're reprinting a press release from one of the two parties. One party. They don't really print press releases from Republicans. But like that has lost. It's been lost. It's just not there anymore. And the assignment editors are to blame. The reporters are, you know, they're hounds.
I agree.
They are sent out to go do a thing.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Heaton, any guess on why people are getting fewer refunds?
I think that the theories that have been posited are worthwhile. I don't know the numbers on them. I do wonder if part of this is just some weird statistical sleight of hand, that there's nothing that's fundamentally changed, but rather the numbers we're looking at have altered. So like there was a story that I read. This is not the story we're currently talking about, but it mirrors it. Back in February, there was a story of tax refunds are down 29% or something like that. And I looked at the data and it was based off of the first 5 days they were looking at for this year. But the year they were comparing it to was the first 12 days. So I looked at that and was like, who the fuck published this? Like, how did this get through the, like, anybody with rudimentary statistical knowledge would look at that and go, well, you're comparing a period that's twice as long. To like, it just like, this is useless data. It's useless data. So I don't know. In the case that we're talking about, it sounds like this is multi-year. So the comparisons,
it is,
at least
it is a trend where it slowly is atrophy.
I guess to put another way, I would love to put a statistician on this.
Is
I think that they might have an insight as to how the grouping of numbers might be affecting things rather than the change of composition in the economy. Although that's possible too.
Patreon.com/we're not wrong is where you can support this show. My wife lost her job and now I am funding a child. So patreon.com/we're not wrong on your donation. Speaking of emotionally manipulative pleas for your money, we're going to be talking about NPR on the Patreon bonus episode. Hell of a week for NPR.
Are they having a baby too?
They are having a cow when it comes to a one-man rebellion saying that they are even more left-leaning than you might imagine. And then the new CEO's old tweets, which let's just say if you're a fan of liberal cringe, do we have a smorgasbord for you on the Patreon. Again, patreon.com/we're not wrong.
Hey, all. Editor Will here. This next conversation was recorded a few hours before the Senate officially voted to dismiss the impeachment charges against Mayorkas along party lines.
House Republicans have initiated impeachment proceedings against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, yet the Democratic-controlled Senate is likely to dismiss the charges swiftly without holding a trial. Mayorkas, who assumed the office at the start of Biden's term, is the first cabinet secretary to be impeached in nearly 150 years. Republicans accuse him of mishandling the southern border issue, a key campaign matter, in 2024. Now, normally this would result in a trial. You impeach in the House, you try in the Senate. But the Senate Democratic majority, as well as some Republicans, are expected to dismiss this case. The White House has pointed to Republicans blocking a bipartisan border deal as proof of their lack of seriousness on this subject in the Senate. Mayorkas, meanwhile, has defended his leadership, calling the impeachment effort baseless. But the Senate leadership must now decide how to handle this, with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer not specifying his plan, but heavily hinting that this is not going to end in a full trial. The Senate could dismiss the articles with a simple majority vote, although it is highly unlikely that the Senate would vote to convict Mayorkas, because that does require a two-thirds majority, for which those who are mad at Alejandro Mayorkas do not currently have. Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin noted that even if it did go to trial, it would likely be over very, very quickly. So, Andrew Heaton, regardless of your opinion on the merits of the charges, should this go to trial?
When you say go to trial, meaning it should go to the Senate to vote
Senate.
On?
The Senate. So normally with impeachment, they impeach in the House, yeah. and then there is a trial in the Senate. Right. That is probably most famously the twice that it happened with Trump and Clinton. The Clinton impeachment back in the 90s.
Okay. And the House has already
impeached Mayorkas.
The House is impeached, and now it's going over to the Senate, where it's uncertain what they're going to do, but there is a scenario in which the Democrats just go, nah, we're going to table entire thing.
I think that this is 90% political posturing bullshit.
On which side? Because there's a rich a crowd to choose from in terms of
let me back up. I don't we've really got into this whole Republican versus Democrat thing. I would love to like resurrect the people versus the politicians thing.
Let's go.
And just say like,
let's go.
The politicians kind of suck. So I think that this is posturing. I'll explain my reasoning on that in a moment. Cause I've kind of come full. I did a little experiment earlier today and went, no, I was right the first time. I think that even if the House is doing something bullshit and theatrical, if they have actually impeached somebody, I think that there's a constitutive obligation on behalf of the Senate to take it seriously and vote on it. The downside that's going to happen to the Democrats is this is exactly what the Republicans want to do. I think the Republicans know that immigration is a wedge issue and a flashpoint. And that they can now force Democrats to vote to keep Mayorkas in there, and they can turn Mayorkas into the sigil and emblem of dysfunctional immigration. And then, look, the Democrats don't even care. They voted to keep him in. I think that's what they're wanting to do. I think this is all an attempt to basically put vulnerable Democratic senators who are in red states in a bad position, and hopefully get more Republican seats picked up, and also to put Trump in a better position in the 2024 election. That being said, even though it's bullshit motivated, I think like impeachment's a serious issue. So if you're the Senate and an impeachment has actually been levied in the House, you have an obligation to vote on
it. Even an unserious impeachment should be treated seriously.
I think so. Yes. Now that being said, I do think this is unserious, and I'll tell you why. What the Republicans are saying is that Mayorkas is doing such a horrible job that he ought to be impeached. When we get into impeachment, we're not talking about maladministration, which is something that we were previously just talking about in terms of how tax
being
dollars
bad
are spent,
at your job,
of being incompetent. That's not what we're talking about with impeachment generally. You're talking about high crimes and misdemeanors, which is the language that the Republicans are couching this in. Now, I did like for a moment think maybe they've got a point. And that was because I'm looking through. I tried to find the press releases and had a very difficult time, Justin. they were not readily available from the Republican Party within the legacy media. But I was able to eventually get through the Speaker's office and find some of the press releases, then go to some of the House's subcommittees on it.
No, the highest place that prints the press release is apparently the podcast notes of Steve Bannon's War Room podcast. Yes. That's pretty much it.
Did you look at the actual articles of impeachment?
No, the amount of stuff, I was overwhelmed with the amount of content. I could only kind of glance at stuff. This is something that I looked at this morning. The issue that I thought might have a point to it was, originally the Republicans were saying, look, we've subpoenaed the Secretary of Homeland Security to come speak before the Congress because of dysfunctional border. He's refusing to do that. And I was like, well, if that's the case, I would say that is such a maladministrative state that you could impeach him. If there's clearly a problem, Congress is the preeminent branch of our government. If a federal employee refuses to come before them and explain the situation, that was part of the reason that I thought that Trump and his cohort should have been impeached back when he was in office, was refusing to adhere to congressional subpoenas. However, I think that was outdated. I'll stand to be corrected on this, but he did actually come before Congress. And
yes.
So that point is,
he did it this week.
Yeah. It's outdated. Right. Then I looked into it and I was like, okay, so the other bit was, they said,
now the ironic thing is when he speaks, you're like, man, somebody should impeach this dude. He's a bit of a dipshit, but yes, he did.
Well, if we impeached federal employees based on incompetency,
ooh, boy.
I worry about the size of
high crimes, misdemeanors, and not knowing your ass from your elbow.
Yeah, I think fill in the blanks. The other bit that I was like, okay, there might be some credence to this was they were saying the Secretary of Homeland Security is flouting laws passed by Congress. And I was like, well, that's serious. Even if they're dumb laws, the jobs of federal officers is not to operate on what laws ought to have been if they're guy one. It's to execute the laws of Congress, right? So I was like, all right, that's serious. Like if Congress said, this is the law and the Department of Homeland Security goes, fuck you, we're doing something different anyway, you and what army? That's serious. And I would impeach somebody for that. And then I started looking at the stuff. And from what I can tell, the issues when you started drilling into it were like, he's releasing people through catch and release as opposed to prosecuting everybody. He's not going after everyone that crosses the border. And I'm looking at that going, no shit. Do you know how many people are crossing the border? Like it's a federal agency with limited resources and limited manpower. And the job of the person that's running that particular agency is going to have to make decisions on where we do not have infinite ability here. We have infinite scope, infinite manpower, infinite resources. Where are we going to put them? In the same way that, like, if I were warden of a prison and I had 400 jail cells and people, the state kept sending me 800 people, I would go, you know what? I'm going to let the 400 least problematic people go because you guys have put me in this fucking horrible position. So I based on my cursory research there, I'm going, I think that the things that Mayorkas is being accused of in terms of flouting law passed by Congress seems to me to fall within the discretion of an executive agency that's making decisions based on that limited resources. And then the other bit, too, is most of this is Congress's fault. The vast majority of this is Congress's fault. I did a big special. Justin and I both went down to the border. We both covered this event. I'm very partial to that phrase, high gates wide gates and high walls. I think there's something to that. But my big takeaway from going down to the border was you're not going to solve illegal immigration until you solve legal immigration. Like if you want to have a really, really bad incentive system where people desperately want to come into the country and we're going, nah, we're only going to let in a trickle, even though there's a whole dam trying to come in here, you're going to get illegal immigration. It's going to happen. And Congress is the institution that could fix that. And I'll kick it to Jen here in a moment. It seems that there has been legislation in the recent past where there would have been increased funding for the border and stuff. The Republicans seem to be in favor of it. And then Trump told them no, because I want to use that as a wedge issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a complicated thing. And I can let Jen run a minute. But the House says, look, we passed a immigration bill, H.R. 2. It's been sitting in the Senate and Schumer won't do anything about it. The bill that you're talking about was not a standalone bill on this. It was a sweetener for the Ukraine aid that may finally have enough juice to
but
get
it was
through.
Bipartisan.
It was,
and it
was,
had a
it was,
lot
it was
of
a
what
negotiated
the Republicans
bipartisan
wanted.
Sweetener to Ukraine aid. It was not a standalone bill, and that did get shot down by Trump.
Yeah.
So TLDR, the Senate should always take.
I mean, also it
seriously.
Wasn't going to pass the House, so it's like there was DOA in the House.
Mm. Why do you say that?
Because.
Attached to Ukrainian funding,
in the same way
that
HR2 is dead in the Senate, the leader of that chamber was not going to put it up for a vote.
Wait a minute, were the Democrats using that as a wedge issue? The same way that, like, were they doing that?
Well,
they're
sitting on HR2. They're not putting that up for a vote. Not that it would pass. It would probably not pass because of the makeup of the Senate. But in that same thing in reverse, the Ukraine aid, right now, the Ukraine aid can't pass clean. And they're trying to break it up and do the hokey pokey and see what they can tie to it to pass it. But you have Speaker Mike Johnson who's risking his speakership to try to pass the Ukraine aid. And, you know, we'll see. But,
which is now Israel aid. And then they're screaming about the border, even though they didn't like the bipartisan thing. It's so fucking dumb.
But yeah, I mean, it's like the assumption because also it didn't pass the Senate. So it's like as soon as it was DOA in the House, the Senate stripped it out and passed the Ukraine aid clean down to the House. So, but
it's
anyway.
Dumb. It's all dumb.
Yeah. Like
Congress is a festival of dumb right now.
Yeah. Well, and that's like I said, like the Senate, I think by obligation should take impeachment seriously. And looking at the border, I don't think there are things that the administration has done that have exacerbated this problem. But I think overall the responsibility with immigration lies with Congress more than it does with the people that are running the border. I think Congress is the main problem in this equation.
Yeah. So like that's true with the big picture. Absolutely. If Congress wants to do something about the border or immigration, they have to pass a law. We completely agree on that. When it comes to the Senate having a trial, we also agree that the Constitution has a process here. If there's an impeachment, there's supposed to be a trial. And I think there should be a trial, but it should go very, very quickly because there were two articles of impeachment against Alejandro Mayorkas. Both of them are not crimes or misdemeanors. They're policy differentials. Is that a word?
Differentiators.
I make up shit all the time and I say it confidently and nobody calls me on it.
Exactly.
So if you just say policy differentials, people will go, oh, I guess that's a Congress term. Yeah. General.
Sure. Look how smart she sounds with those.
We will be differential.
Glasses on. Oh, yeah. That's probably not the word I was looking for, was it?
That's fagerly.
Well, they have differences in opinion on what the policy should be in terms of enforcing the current law at the border. And that's what he's being impeached for. And that is not the proper use of impeachment. I think this is it's a misuse of power happening in the House. And what Alejandro Mayorkas deserves is to be acquitted of this impeachment. So if they just skip the whole thing, the history books, it kind of puts a question mark on the whole thing where the guy hasn't committed any crimes. And I think especially where the Democrats are in control of the Senate, they should have a trial to say this guy didn't commit a crime. And so I think there absolutely should be a trial, even if it takes 10 minutes, even if it means that Chuck Schumer says we're going to swear in the jury. We're going to have 10 minutes of debate because you don't have standing here. There was no crime. There's no crime even accused. And so therefore we're dismissing this. But the trial, it should be an official acquittal.
Heaton hit on it. And I can't believe I fucking missed it, but Heaton got it.
Here's finally, the reason why. Fucking finally.
Here's the reason why it's not going to happen and why Schumer doesn't want it. Because I agree with you, especially when it's like, hey, a Democratic House impeached the president twice and a Republican-led Senate had a trial for it. What you don't want is somebody like Mitch McConnell, who is leaving leadership. But the old Mitch McConnell would have said, hey, if you don't want to do this, then the next time that we run the Senate and you want to impeach, you know, the president, a Republican president, maybe I sit on it. He does the same thing that he did with the Supreme Court. He does the same thing that he did going back before that. So, but here's the reason why, because otherwise it would make sense. Yeah. Embarrass the Republicans. These are absolutely dumb charges. They're not high crimes and misdemeanors, but they don't want the vote on the record for the following reasons: John Tester, Sherrod Brown, slot kid in Michigan, Jackie Rosen in Nevada, because all of these swing states that they are going to have to barely eke out Senate wins. It is a horrible map for the Democrats this year. It's a once in a generation pickup opportunity for the Republicans in the Senate just by the seats that happen to be up, and it's a presidential election year. So they're not going to have a turnout problem. It's lined up for them, and they don't want the scary black and white ad with a billion people running over the border that says Jackie Rosen voted to keep the border open and to not impeach the man who's in charge of it, Alejandro Mayorkas. She believes in open borders. Vote. I forget. I think it's Brown in Nevada. That's the reason why they don't want a vote on the record of these candidates in this map specifically.
So look at them putting their party over the country and the Constitution.
All came to what I wanted, 100%. Which is the people versus the politicians. This is where I wanted to wind up.
Because otherwise it's like, look, this would be a 5-second thing. Yeah. Transmit that we can do it before lunch.
Could they theoretically, I'm trying to think of a, could they go, okay, we're going to have a Senate vote. We're going to have a Senate trial, but oh, you know what? So much is going on with Israel and Ukraine right now. We're going to do a Senate delegation. We're going to send these four very specific foreign policy hawks who are from swing states that are Democrats over to the, and they won't be here for the vote because they have to, like, they just do that and just take the, I was in Israel and I was doing the thing that you wanted me to do over there. Like,
they might be able to do that. I mean, the other side would be for them to vote to impeach because they have a little bit of a wiggle room that you have Democrats vote to impeach Mayorkas.
Because it's John Tester. 2/3 majority to remove. So if you have like 3 Democrats go like call up John Mayorkas and be like, hey, it's nothing personal. I'm in a swing state.
So there are two seats
that
are. But
at the same time, like, we're talking about an abuse of power by the House Republicans. So for any Democrat to vote for this, they're saying that this was appropriate. Like, no, they shouldn't vote for this. You know, I'm getting to the point that I feel like I always used to say I don't want term limits because if someone is representing you well, they should be able to stay in Congress as long as you want. I'm getting to the point that I think there should be term limits and it should be one term so that shit like this doesn't happen. So that you don't put your own
2 years
fucking everywhere. Like maybe make the terms longer. I don't know. But the idea that there are things that are happening that are important and it's political calculations, it's their own reelection, it's their fucking parties that is being put above the actual business of the country all the time. I'm just so sick of it. And this is such a perfect example of that. The answer here is so crystal clear. He should be acquitted of this. The end.
Quick.
But
the hurry up offense. Yeah. Let's just bang it out, get it done. But I'm glad we came to that because I had not put two and two together, but they don't want specifically Ohio and Montana. Ohio and Montana, they have popular incumbents. But these are states that since the last term,
and they're on the southern border. So this is a really important vote for them.
Since the last term, things have gotten very red in those states. Ohio's gotten very red. Montana's gotten very red. And so you've got, you know, they don't want that stuff plays.
Is the crook from New Jersey still in the Senate we talked about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
His trial's beginning soon.
Oh, okay.
It looks like he's planning to throw bubbles under the bus.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, so the FISA thing that we talked about last week, the Biggs Amendment that was the one that would require people to get a warrant came tied in the House. And then Johnson cast the deciding vote to spike that amendment, which left the Republican Party looking at the vacated seat of one George Santos.
Wow.
If only
Spike Beans voted against it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's gone.
It failed.
Yeah. But yeah, if they had just said, no, when Menendez goes, Santos goes, we know they're both crooks, but we're going to leave him in. Then he for sure would have been a vote in favor to spike FISA because he would just, you know, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah. But we'll find out the deadline. Well, apparently there's some wiggle room. So there is a deadline of this Friday, but like not really. Like the authorizations still kind of go on. So I don't know what's going on. But
to pass it in the Senate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ron Wyden is just spitting mad about whatever is in this bill. So I haven't read it yet. But if it becomes law, we might have to take a look at this one because if he's this angry about it, it can't be good.
We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. Now paired with the TikTok bill. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. By the way, for the first time ever, we're talking about FISA because it's a very important part of our, what happens in Congress and what happens for the government's interaction with you. First time ever, zero emails.
Nothing.
Zero. Huh. Zero emails about FISA.
Does that mean everyone just agrees that we're not wrong?
And I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it.
Everybody's just given up on privacy. They've just, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe everything we were saying, like, a get a warrant is so obvious. A lot of emails
about AI porn.
Well, of course.
A lot of emails about AI porn in the Patreon, but not a lot on FISA.
How many times did you see my digital boobs in the...
No actual digital porn.
Aw, thanks, audience. I appreciate it.
A lot of curly cute penis heating pics I got sent. Thanks, gang. I'm going to make a calendar.
Well, hello, writes in the current episode. Justin asks, did you get any hail heating? And from now on, I would like y'all to begin each episode by greeting Andrew with hail heating.
Love this. You guys should do this just kind of throughout your life, even when I'm not in the room. Hail heating. But like a Roman, not like a fucking Nazi.
Yeah, it sounds very Nazi.
No. Think Julius Caesar.
I think it all depends on what you're doing with your hands when you say hail Heaton.
You know? Wait, quick aside.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Bellamy salute?
No.
Okay. So you know, the Pledge of Allegiance.
I'm familiar.
Right. Okay. So that was written by a guy named, I think, Richard Bellamy in the 1910s, 1920s. Came up with the Pledge of Allegiance before the Nazis were a political power.
Yep.
So originally, the Pledge of Allegiance in the United States was done in the quote unquote Roman style of putting your arm up. Not going to do it on camera.
Yeah.
Putting your arm up. And
if you do, bend that elbow.
Pointing it towards the flag. So you can find all these pictures of school children doing what looks like a Sieg Heil.
Anyone who watched a Rage Against the Machine video, that's the footage that they are showing of the kids. doing it. That's real footage. It's real 19 whatever footage, but it was the Roman, much in the same way that, what is it, like the Buddhist that had the swastika hijacked from him.
Yeah. There's also this, there's a town in upstate New York called Swastika New York.
And
they're pulling the what's that singer Bolton? Michael Bolton. They're pulling the Michael Bolton defense where they're like, why should we have to fucking change our name?
Yeah.
Just because they we named our town in 1886 out of respect for Native American symbols. Like we're not changing it. And yeah.
Just get Gatorade to sponsor it and be over with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank our moderator, writes, the presidential debates have all the negative qualities Heaton described, and nonetheless, I think they're the most useful format to inform most of the electorate. Most voters are just picking which spirit animal of the USA they want, and consequences and policy will actually come downstream from the staff in the cabinet.
I think that spirit animal thing is absolutely true. I think a significant amount of the presidential election is, who's our spirit animal? Who's going to be national chaplain? Who will be the soul of the nation? And the president's
literally what Biden ran on.
The president's just the fucking top bureaucrat. Yeah. I don't take my spiritual orders from the president. He's not even the head of the country. He's the head of the government of the country. Like, the country's a big old sloppy mess. The government's one part of the country. You're electing the chief bureaucrat. But I digress.
Crisis. Every time Heaton brings up.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yes, you can.
What are your spirit animals?
Ooh.
As in, like, the actual animals?
Yeah, like, what animal do you think, like, dog. Is Andrew Heaton? You think you're a dog?
Yeah, I'm a straight-up dog. Yeah. I think
you
look
you're
like
a lovable dum-dum?
I look like a meerkat, but I think my spirit animal is probably, like, a Labrador retriever or something.
Aw, yeah. That's sweet. Mm-hmm.
I'd go with a fox, but not an animal fox, like a guy in a furry suit.
Nice. Nice. Maybe I could go with cougar in that case, but, like, not like an animal cougar, like a hot, sexy older lady.
I like it. I'm a turtle. Pretty sure. Like one of the ones in Hawaii that just kind of like goes out there and floats. That's my spirit animal.
I like that one. Mm. Yeah. Wise.
Yeah.
The turtle.
They are pretty smart. And they're also pretty old. So that's getting increasingly more relevant.
Crisis. Every time Heaton brings up his idea about using hypothetical scenarios to replace debates, I think about the Outer Limits episode about the U.S. president who right after his inauguration faces an alien fleet approaching Earth. In this episode, America and Russia launch joint nuclear strikes against the aliens. The aliens destroyed the missiles and launched their own strikes against Washington and Moscow. The twist, of course, was the aliens just wanted to be our friends and we couldn't understand their message. Heaton, you can always tell the orphanage listeners.
Yeah, yeah. I love you guys. I love you guys. Outer Limits was a great program. That was a fine episode. Thank you for that shout out.
Is that a classic or the reboot?
That's the reboot. I've never actually seen the classic. I saw like the 90s reboot that they did, but it was great. That was really good 90s programming.
Oxford style debate fan writes, Oxford style debates would be nice.
Yeah.
One day.
I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Do you know? Well, you know, you listen to Oxford style debates.
Yeah,
right?
No, they're great. Cause like you're with Oxford debates, you're not arguing about a person, though. You're arguing about a position. So like the way I mean, in addition to the fact that Oxford style debates are governed by like you have X amount of time to speak and there's a particular order. The neat feature of Oxford style debates is the winner is determined by who swayed the most minds. So theoretically, if we came in and we were, I don't know, arguing about corn tariffs or something, people at the beginning would say, like, are you in favor of corn tariffs or are you against corn tariffs? You'd mark that down. And then at the end, you look at how big the shift was. So like if it was like already that. Like, well, 80% of the people in the room already agreed with Jen on corn tariffs. But by the end of it, like 70% of the people agreed with Jen, even though a majority of people in the room were already there. It's that more people were swayed by the other argument.
I like that. And they're like, if American Idol can have us vote, like, why can't we vote in real time on whose arguments are better in a presidential debate? That'd be so fun.
I think that you could probably do a slightly more tolerable version because like an Oxford style debate is like an hour. Pretty
also,
solid.
I having been a part of this world, people game it the people that are debating will like go to all their friends at the beginning and go, say you're undecided. That way, like when you inevitably come to my position, but still.
But you could do a TV version where you could find some group of people that would, you could find 100 people that would, you know, lock in their vote one way or another and then would say X, Y, or Z. Or you could do like an American Idol style thing, like you said, where people text it in. But yeah, you'd have to pack it into a smaller window, but I don't think it'd be impossible.
It'd be fun.
And it might actually shake up the gruel that is cable news that are the same dumb, talking head things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
The motto of Heaton's collective. You said you wanted to live in a commune of some sort.
I'll live in a commune for a few years. That'd be fun.
Mundus pax ego concito, which in Latin is world peace, I guess.
Nice. I like that.
Here we go. Heaton is a fraud, writes. You claim that you didn't vote for Gary Johnson 1 year because you were in a swing state and you realized that that vote would have more power. But by not casting that vote, have you not completely ruined your case for being against the duopoly? Answer the charges, fraud.
You raise a very good point. I will bring up that Heaton at age 28 might have certain differences in opinion and strategy than Heaton at age 40. I am not monolithic throughout time and space. And I think I'm a lot more inclined towards this position today than I was when I was 28 and was a lot more strategic in how I vote. But even now, I'm still somewhat strategic in how I vote.
And I feel like the stakes weren't that high in 2012. Like, it was just a different time. I felt like doing congressional dish back then was kind of an obscure thing. Like, people weren't panicked because Trump hadn't won anything. It was just a different time.
It was a different time.
Yeah.
It was the last time that if I talked about politics not in an election year, people would tell me to shut up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now people ask me my opinion about politics all the time, at every time, asking the same question. Mm-hmm. Is Trump going to be president?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over and over and over again for 12 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just different.
The League of Extraordinary Communities writes, this is a coalition of state jokes, and it seems right up Heaton's alley, and it weirdly keeps this middle American to Scotland bridge alive. It is a union of boring Oregon and the city of Dull in Scotland.
Nice. So they're going to become like sister cities based on the names.
Boring and Dull.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's a really good idea. Yeah. I like Nebraska just changed their, I don't know if it was their motto or their billboard recently, but their billboard was Nebraska, not for everybody, which made me like Nebraska much more. Jim, what were you going to say? You got animated for a second.
No, I think she read the next question.
I read the next question.
Which is, candidate Briney, Jen, you've previously expressed interest in running for the House. What are you running on? Give us your pitch. And Justin, you're her campaign manager. What advice do you give her? What's her strategy? Well, as a campaign manager, I would want to have a conversation about this before she said it publicly, but knowing that Jen wouldn't listen to me anyway, go ahead.
That's the thing. This isn't going to work. I don't know. I've kicked around the idea. I feel like I would be good in the House of Representatives. First of all, I think I should put my name on the ballot at least once just to practice what I preach. And go through the process and like see what that's like. I think I would be good in the House of Representatives because I've personally witnessed times where things have been voted on by unanimous consent or not gotten a vote at all and become law and they shouldn't have. I have dreams of being next to Tom Massey when he demanded a vote on the CARES Act. I think is one of the bravest things I've ever seen someone in Congress do. And he did it all by himself. And I would have loved to have been standing right next to him. I feel like the institution is in trouble. And so, I would love to be that person that isn't dialing for dollars for 2 years, but instead has my ass sitting in the House on the floor and takes part in every debate, tells you what's in every bill, makes sure that it's about policy, and calls these people out on their campaign contributions. In the hearings and on the floor, one of the things that makes me crazy is there's this unspoken rule where they just don't discuss the money behind their decisions because they're all doing it, so none of them can address it. I could fucking address it. But that's where we would have a problem because I would want to run in a way that isn't based on collecting a ton of money. And that is the game. So I would only win if I could completely blow up their game. And so I don't think I would ever actually win, but it is something that we've discussed.
Yeah, so I would, number one, say that Jen is the exact truth teller that America needs and that you can support her at the Act Blue account that we'd set up because we're not going to take any kind of funding from lobbyists or special interests because everybody else is corrupt and only Jen is pure.
Not true, but I don't want it to be based on money. I knew this was going to be a problem.
Oh, no. But money from the people.
I don't know about that either. I don't know if I want to take money from anyone.
Okay, but you need to win election.
Exactly, and the fights begin.
No, only volunteers, no professional campaign staff.
Yeah, and if like if we need lawn signs, well, let's have families do arts and crafts with their kids. If we need internet attention, then we try and get internet attention organically. Get me on the big shows because they want to have me. There's a few here in Austin that might actually work in our favor. There's like when you look at what the campaign money would be spent on, it's attention and it's shit in the mail that everyone hates anyway. So
not always. Not always.
What do you need the money for?
What you need the money to have a staff of people that are paying attention to the things that are relevant to the campaign and that actually make a difference. You don't need to have a lot of money. You can say that you have that you've been outspent, and we probably would be, but you do need to open up to people that want to support you. If people want to support you, if they believe in your message, I think you are cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Hey, Justin, you've got a full-time job and a pregnant wife. Do you want to take on a volunteer position, or would you need?
I would not need money. Okay. No, I would do it because I love Jen and I believe in her. And again, she's the only truth teller that has ever run for Congress, and she's going to shake up this institution, the likes of which nobody's ever seen.
See, even my campaign manager is making fun of me.
I'm not. I think he's literally saying
the bullet points that would be the campaign.
Exactly. Jesus Christ. This is, again, the problem.
We're going to have so many problems.
You're questioning his tone, not the actual wording. That is a very good campaign direction for your campaign.
No. And then I'd find whether or not Lloyd Doggett like hit a drifter at some point and make sure that gets leaked to the press. Like,
and that's the thing. I would be very nice to Lloyd Doggett. I don't have any problems with Lloyd Doggett.
You would. I wouldn't. Because my goal is to win. No, I think that if you were taking this seriously from a campaign perspective, then Jen is an outsider. Jen is a truth teller. The establishment doesn't want her there. And so that's the reason why you should put her there, because nobody else is going to do it. And she's going to practice what she preaches, as she has done on her podcast, as her loyal listeners on this show and her show already understand, that she wears her heart on her sleeve. She's never going to lie to you. And even if this is a 2-year circuit breaker in Congress and to the power structure of the you know, whatever party apparatus we are shaking up, then great. Awesome. Let it be 2 years and then they can have it back and figure it out past that. But that's what we do.
'Cause having actual power sounds terrifying. Being famous sounds terrifying. I love my life right now.
These clips, perfect. I would immediately be scrubbing these clips right now, because this is the attack ad that gets run against her.
But it's true. Like, all of this sounds really scary. My life is perfect. I don't necessarily like want to do this, but I do think I'd be good for the job. And I do see this as a public service.
Yeah.
Like, when I look back to that CARES Act thing, one of the things about this Congress, which is still full of the exact same people, is they abandoned us when COVID happened. They should have all stayed in Washington, D.C. and taken care of the country. We had laws that needed to be changed. Instead, they threw the CARES Act together as fast as possible. It was incredibly flawed, threw so much money. I mean, one example that we all know is true. They tried to save our small businesses with the PPP program, but they defined small business as a business that has 500 or fewer employees per location. Which means, of course, the corporations were going to come in there because they have people that do administration full time on standby. They were the first ones in line. They got all of the money. And we all know of a small business that we love that didn't make it through COVID. And it's because that program was so poorly put together and it was only one piece of the CARES Act. And they all, instead of staying in Washington, D.C. to quarantine, fucked off and went home and ate fancy ice cream in their mansions with their pantsless husbands. Which I'm obviously talking about Nancy Pelosi. But like, that was the decision that was made by these people. And I wish I had been there at that moment to be like, no, we stay here. And so I do feel like there's sacrifice that comes with public service. And the sacrifice for me would be to give up my honestly perfect life that I have right now and spend 2, or if I do a good job, more years in that funny farm with people I despise, having pretty much everyone hate me. I mean, neither party, no one in either party is going to like me. I'm going to go to AOC first because I think we might be able to be friends. I'm from Katie Porter's district. I think we might be friends. I'd definitely be friends with Massey. So I have like a handful of people that I feel like wouldn't totally despise me, but the leadership would despise me. The media would despise me. Like, this doesn't sound fucking fun for me, but I'm willing to do it
once.
I would run that as a campaign ad, and I would only add that I'm just unsettled by these rumors that Lloyd Doggett hit a drifter.
Poor Lloyd Doggett.
I don't know, just something I heard. It's on a podcast.
Lloyd Doggett.
Given that this is all very big picture, lots of wheels, I think something that would be, I would love to hear your experience. I think you should intern in Congress for a couple of months. That's something that you could absolutely get the funding to do. You would be working in the institution, and
sounds awful.
You'd be able to get an insider perspective. There are people that listen to the show that work in congressional offices. I'm sure that if you reached out to Katie Porter's office and said, like, I would like to be a, they would make a title up for you. They wouldn't call you an intern. They'd call you a media fellow. But you'd be able to work in the office. I think that you'd really enjoy that. Like, I didn't work in Congress for very long, but it was very, very eye opening. And I think
like
you'd get a lot out of it.
Like do a residency in DC for 3 months or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it.
Maybe we'll poke around when we're up in DC. Tickets coming soon, by the way. The only reason why we don't have tickets up right now is because we're still waiting for a contract from the venue. So,
oh, by the way, I got requests from somebody that up in DC specifically, Justin, who would like you to make that announcement on Patreon first. As he is worried about the tickets selling out.
We will.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Patrons will get it first. The Eventbrite's already set up. I just don't want to sell tickets to a thing that we don't have a contract to.
So no, that's totally fair.
Waiting on that, but it will be very, very soon. Finally, Listen Up Losers writes, Justin is psychologically well-suited to being a wrestling heel. He actually feeds off the boos and hisses of people that he doesn't respect. Nailed it.
True.
We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is Will Saddleberg on PX3 this week. I talked about politics and religion with a guy who hosts a podcast called Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other.
It's a long title.
It was a good long title, but packs a lot into it.
Wait, who is that? I think I know.
Corey Nathan.
Forget it. I'll check out the episode. I look forward
check
to
out
it.
Check out the episode.
I feel like I've heard of him before, and yeah.
And then on Friday's episode, we have our friend Evan Scrimshaw, and we go back to the year 2000 for every election. There's a lot of talk about demographics in this election, young people, old people, minorities specifically, whether or not there's going to be a big shift in demographics that'll decide this election. We went back every election since 2000. Starting with Palm Beach Jews, and went all the way to 2024 on what demographic did decide that election, looking back in the cold light of day, and what we think going forward with Evan Scrimshaw. So two good episodes coming on up. Jen.
So there is a congressional dish coming out possibly before this episode comes out. We have been working on it quite hard and fast because
top men are on it.
Yes. And it's a little bit different than the one that I told you we were going to do, because last Saturday we may have seen the beginning of World War III. Right now it's seeming kind of calm, but like, don't know. So Iran attacked Israel. So I decided to focus solely on Israel in this episode and tell you what's already law. So, I mean, you guys know my opinion because of this show and my previous congressional dishes. This one isn't so much that, although obviously it's in there, but it's really like, okay, if you're going to advocate for something, if you're going to call your congressman, you should at least know what has already become law, what is already headed towards Israel, what they've already done. So I looked in the National Defense Authorization. There was pretty big change in there, and the funding law. So you can know what Israel is getting. And so that way, if you want to either defund it or add more funding, whatever, you'll at least know where they currently stand.
Very informative. Mm-hmm. Mr. Andrew Heaton.
I am doing a massive special on if life was actually easier.
Is it
in
coming
the
out?
50s. That is, it should be coming out tomorrow. Man, this was a month of research. I hired voice, not that I didn't hire, I got voice actors to come on the program. Hopefully will be funny and entertaining. I think so, because I've added a lot of comedy to it. And I think that I've approached it in a very novel way that other people have not done previously. A lot of the time when we talk about the 50s, we talk about it as, rightly, a period of American history. We're looking at it as a time period we went through. And what I'm curious is, if it were a country today, like if it were a place that you could physically go visit, you could hop on a plane and go there, what would people think of it? And I think we would view it as a second world country. I think if you were able to go to the 50s now, and you were able to see how the income distribution works and how the healthcare system works and how much houses cost and how much disposable income people cost and how jobs work. We would look at it like a second country, or excuse me, a second world country. I say that with pretty good arguments in favor of it. I think I did a fuck ton of economic research on this one, like really frustrating economic research of like
that you have been. A scraping on this yes, one. This is
like
minute.
Heaton, like throwing coffee cups against the wall, shouting, "God damn it, Bureau of Labor Statistics! You can't use median household income one year, then switch to averages, you fucks!"
And like that kind of thing. Just rip all the photos with the red string off the wall.
So it's fun. If you've, I'll say for anybody, if you're interested in the 50s in general, I think it's going to be a fascinating episode because the whole conceit is that we are literally visiting the 50s as a foreign country. If you were from the 50s. I don't think that you're going to feel bad, but I think it'll be an interesting way to look at it, because rather than viewing it as your childhood, you're going to view it as a an actual place that adults were. You weren't adult in the 50s.
Kind of like Pleasantville.
I focus very hard on the economics, partly because one, I think people.
But I just mean like the concept. Like you're kind of going back. Well,
it sounds like you are kind of answering this meme that has sort of gone around of like, this is what they took from you.
Right.
That
in the 50s, there was a one earner household, and yet they could afford a home and two cars and send the kids to college.
They had more disposable income.
And that's mostly bullshit. There are a couple of things that were better in the 50s that I mentioned in the program. But for the most, my personal theory, this is just Heaton's theory, is I think that when baby boomers talk about how wonderful the 50s were, they are talking about how wonderful their childhood was. And how comparatively simple they're like, you know, back in my childhood, I don't remember worrying about mortgage rates or crime.
Sure.
Me too. Weirdly enough, I don't like in the 80s, I don't ever remember going, "God damn it, if Mondale gets in," like that never fucking occurred to me. Right. And that's fine. That means you had a good childhood and you should treasure that. And like your parents, your grandparents were there. That's really wonderful. I don't want to sour anybody's childhood.
Yeah.
But it is different to think about what would a 40-year-old in 1950 think about. And so it's a really, really in-depth episode. If you've ever been intrigued by the 50s, you've ever wanted to emulate the 50s in any way, particularly economically, which is what I pay attention to, since I'm assuming most people know we were in apartheid state. this is a massive in-depth episode on the political orphanage.
That's an important point.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 50s sucked for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even think, you know, me during the summer doesn't make the cut.
Was I allowed to vote?
Yes.
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 Okay. Barely.
In the 50s. Yeah. But
regretting it.
I'm not sure. I didn't get it. Cause again, like
I wasn't allowed to have my own credit card though. Right.
I was about to say, I am assuming, I tell people at the beginning of the program, I am assuming, you know, the 50s are a lot more sexist and homophobic and racist than now. I'm not going to belabor that point, but I'm going to focus on the objective stuff. But yeah, I think the credit card thing, I think if you wanted to open up your own business or a bank account, there was a good chance you had to have a guy sign off on it. I don't know all the details of that. And then on the racist thing, one of the running jokes that I have in it is I'll have a really pleasant interaction with somebody and then they'll go, "Have a great day and watch out for bleep."
Yeah.
just have like a variety of soft racism that's been bleeped out from there.
There we go. Well, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah.
I know you've been working really, really hard on it. And that wraps it up for us today. For Andrew Heaton and Jen Briney, I'm Justin Robert Young. Where? Wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.